This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In your town, your suburb. From Casterton to Mallacoota.
From Mildura to Wilson's Prom.
This is where the conversation begins.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. This is the Conversation Hour.
There are 13 million unused bedrooms across Australia. So could we offer them up? Growing up, it was actually really common to go to a friend's place and have a boarder sitting at the dinner table with you. It could have been a student from overseas or even a student from a different part of Victoria. But if you had a big house and a spare bedroom, it just kind of made sense to open it up. But now, as our homes have become larger, many bedrooms even have their own en-suites, something that was unheard of unless you were basically royalty when I was growing up. So why don't we open up our spare bedrooms? Is this one simple solution to our housing crisis that's potentially being overlooked? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. Nick, again in the news this morning, we heard that in regional Victoria, rental vacancy is at just 1.2%. It has never made more sense for us to open up our homes and open up our spare bedrooms. So why don't we?
It's a really, really good question. I'll show my age here, but when I was at university, student notice boards, that was pre-internet days, we'd actually tack up a little piece of paper. They were always full of people who were looking for boarders. It was really common. Plenty of people I went to uni with were boarding in a spare room or a little flat out the back. It was a really common way of doing it. You talked about that 1.2%. September last year, Shepparton had a vacancy rate of 0.6%. We've seen, yeah, look, it's got really bad for a long time. It's not just about those vacancy rates either. It's about affordability. It's really funny to me how quickly this idea of boarding, of having people in, has just dropped off from something that was very, very common for a really long time.
And it's a win-win, right? So depending on your circumstances, of course taking in a boarder isn't going to suit everyone, but it may suit some families, you know, if you have a big house and you already have one of those fantastic kind of open door policies and it just sort of suits the vibe of the family. Maybe your kids have left home, or maybe you don't have children and you've got the space. So it doesn't suit everyone, but there is still a lot of red tape, right? There is still a lot of tax implications, of pension implications that's making it really hard for people to do. But one of our guests who we'll hear from later in the program from MyStay, he honestly, and hand on heart, believes that international students in particular should not even enter the private real estate market. That boarding, moving in with a family, it's a cultural exchange, right? It's something we can all benefit from.
I thought it would be a lovely thing, and I get it. You know, you are hammering it home, but it's so true. It is not for everyone. But, for example, my physio here in Shepparton, she's from South Africa. She's technically renting someone's granny flat out the back, but actually she's dining with this family 5 days a week. It's an older couple who are just really excited to have someone in to chat to learn a bit from, and she's loving it as well. To me, this seems a perfect encapsulation of what you're talking about.
I wonder whether we just don't even consider it, whether there's a marketing or education campaign that's needed, because for a lot of people too, to downsize or right size isn't as simple as it once was. Anyhow, we're going to try and go through all of this today and solve it within a 50-minute period. So would you consider opening up a spare room? If you look around your house and you think, I have the space, would you do it? And if not, what's stopping you? Is it privacy? Is it red tape? Do we need better incentives or even a marketing campaign? And then there's the bigger question of, do we simply not want to share our homes?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton as we talk about the 13 million spare bedrooms that we have around Australia. How common is it to have a boarder stay with you? This text, it's not common in my friendship circle, even as a large school. I've never even heard of this. Your claim is just circumstantial. Well, that's all individual. Rental vacancies at 1.2%, says this particular text. It's even lower where we live. But we're wondering around the spare bedrooms. This, regarding people having boarders, I think a few people that own their own homes are worried about having to pay capital gains tax for the area where the boarder lives. The other thing, when it's necessary to evict a boarder, maybe due to bad behaviour, it's difficult to be able to do that. That's from Janine.
Oh, I've seen this one here saying I did rent out a room. Technically, I was a landlord, had to follow renting rules. It was beyond ridiculous. I'm going to not do it again, says this texter. Renting rooms will drop off unless we do get rid of that red tape. And I think that is going to be the theme of a lot of today.
There are some incredible initiatives, and we talk about a marketing campaign and an education campaign. There are some wonderful organisations and initiatives already out there. Three of which are in the studio this morning. Please welcome to the conversation our Lisa Button, who is the Chief Executive Officer at the Community Refugee Sponsorship Program of Australia. Lou Hurley, who is one of the sponsors who decided to take up and be a part of this program. And Ayat Hakim, who is a Syrian refugee who arrived in Australia only a couple of months ago and has been a benefit of this particular program. Lisa, tell us about the Community Refugee Sponsorship Program. How does it work?
Well, thank you. It's so great to be here. Essentially, the program that we run in partnership with federal government, it has the acronym CRISP, which stands for Community Refugee Integration and Settlement Pilot. And it's not primarily a housing program, but it does have a strong housing dimension. And what it really involves is groups of everyday Australians, five or more people who live in the same geographic community, putting their hands up and saying, we would like to support a refugee newcomer or family to arrive into our local community, and we'll help them settle here over a period of at least 12 months. And that involves everything from getting to know them before they arrive in Australia, meeting them at the airport, arranging temporary accommodation for them on arrival, basic household goods, helping them find long-term accommodation, and then very sort of tailored support depending on the needs and aspirations of the individual as they get to know one another. And we see some fantastic things happening in the housing space with this program, which Lou and Ayat are hopefully going to talk about.
Well, Lou, I did want to ask, what made you want to become involved with this?
Indeed, good question. So I'm part of a group of five people and we call ourselves Birrarung Strawberry, interestingly enough. And I guess, yeah, we joined CRISP and we went through, I guess, the process that Lisa's just talking about. And, yeah, we were very interested, I guess, to show solidarity with particularly LGBTIQ queers across the world, as queers ourselves. And then the opportunity came up, I guess, for us to be talking amongst ourselves about what resources and skills, etc., that we could offer someone who's we were matched with. And fortunately, I had a spare room in my home. So I was, yeah, more than happy to, make that room available for the person that we were matched with, which was, of course, the wonderful Ayat.
Ayat, I mean, I have to say, looking at the three of you in here, you all just have this glow and the smile on your face. It is so apparent that this has been an incredible experience for all of you. Ayat, I mean, you've only been here 2 months.
Yeah.
How life-changing was it for you to be welcomed by Lou and by the others? Because Lou also opened up their home for you to be able to move in and settle until you found your own place. How important was that for you?
Actually, first, thank you for having me here. Second, like, when you move from a country, when you don't have any opportunity to even work or have a house or someone to say, you're welcome to have my room or something. And I saw Lou and all the group that are offering all of that kindness and helpful things for me. That was so amazing. Actually, I was coming for the unknown. I don't know where I should stay or what the people around me will be, how they will treat me, actually. And for me as LGBTQ, I was worrying about to be with someone who don't understand my thoughts And I was so lucky to
find, feel safe.
Yeah, I was so lucky to find these five people who are from the community and they understand me and they know what should I do here in the country to success and to achieve all my goals.
Lisa, I know a lot would happen behind the scenes to make sure that, you know, any experience like this, you're matching the right people together.
That's right. On the one hand, we call it a tight, loose approach because at the beginning we set really high bars for getting involved. The groups who sign up, they do have to do some training and they provide police and working with children checks to make sure that, you know, they're of good character and we can trust them. But then once they are matched with the person or family that they're going to support, we sort of step right back at that point. We provide support as needed, but we're not directing, you know, that you have to do this on a Monday or that on a Tuesday or that there's only one way of solving a particular problem. So when it comes to housing, for example, you know, there's a clear obligation on the group to provide temporary accommodation for the first few weeks. But we don't say that has to be in the person's home. It could be in someone's home. It could be in an Airbnb somewhere else. It could be in an entirely separate, you know, piece of accommodation or a service department, whatever, however the group wants to solve that particular challenge.
It's creating the village, right? It's creating a welcoming network for that person. Lou, I mentioned the term cultural exchange, that this is a win-win. Of course, Ayat, for you, you have that security knowledge, you have that localised information. But what did you get out of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, it's been such a rewarding and continues to be a really rewarding experience as a sponsor, but also living with Ayat. All sorts of things. I guess, you know, Ayat was always cooking up something delicious in the kitchen, much better cook than me. And I would occasionally get to sort of, she would occasionally cook me some lovely meals. And I guess just we had wonderful conversations, you know, that just sort of really rich, lovely conversations where we were able to kind of talk about, you know, the similarities and differences in our lives, also interesting around LGBTIQ experiences, I guess, and, make a new friend that maybe I would not otherwise have met in another circumstance. Yeah, it's been a really delightful experience. We get on really well. And also we had another bonding experience with my little dog, Zach. So, you know, I wasn't quite sure if I would like my dog. But
what sort of dog is Zach? What sort of dog?
He's a little Maltese. Okay. Yeah, a little old Maltese. Mm. So he was part of the family, I
guess. He's so sweet. I can eat him all the time.
So you're in your own place now, right? You're working and studying?
I'm studying and tomorrow my first shift and working,
Life-changing,
I did that in like 2 months. I wasn't expect to do all of that in this period of time, but with the helping of all of these people around me and especially spending time actually with Lou in their house, it gave me like a feeling about I'm settling down, I'm in my home. And the conversation we made, like we shared a lot of our experience, our cultures, that helped me more to know what should I do next. And I found the housing, like it was so easy for me. I don't know how.
Because you had this network of people to be able to help you through it.
Yeah, like one of our group introduced me for their friends and friends for friends. And then I spread the word that I need a room. So we found a student accommodation, which is randomly, I don't know how, but I got it. I'm so lucky, I don't know how. But I wish that there was more opportunities for housing because at the first 2 weeks I came here, I started looking for the housing and the rooms for sharing. It was so expensive and they need a lot of specific information from the person who will live in this house. And I wasn't like good for this position.
That's
like,
right, you've only been here.
I don't have history for renting or working or all of that. So it was so hard at the first 2 weeks, but when I have communications and connection, it was so easy for me.
This story is something that can get bigger, and I know that there is a sponsorship campaign that you're running at the moment. Can you talk us through, Lisa, the 100, is it so 100 sponsors in 100 days? Am I right?
That's right, yeah. We have World Refugee Day coming up on the 20th of June, and we thought that's a really good target date to amp up our messaging to the community and encourage more and more people to get involved. So we're aiming to mobilise 100 new groups to form groups like that that Lou's part of in the 100 days leading up to World Refugee Day. So we're in the last month of that, and so far we've reached 64. So we're on track.
Oh, so no pressure, listeners.
No pressure. But look, I really do want to say, having said, you know, that there are some, that it takes a lot to get involved, anyone can do this. It's there's no qualifications needed. There's no special skills. You do it as a team, so you rely on one another to fill different skill sets. And our team around the country can help a lot. We're only just a phone call away, and we have a lot of resources. So anyone, I think, who's ever felt they wanted to help someone settle in Australia or feels inspired or concerned about the state of the world when it comes to the global refugee crisis, I think
this is
a really great practical opportunity.
Can they jump on your website?
Yes, www.refugeesponsorship.org.au, and you'll find everything you need to know there.
Right, and it's till the end of June.
But
we're at 64. Honest, we can get to 100. We can top it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And look, we're not going to stop there. We want this to be something that happens for decades to come.
A huge congratulations to all of you, and it was so lovely to meet you and to be inspired, actually, by what you've done. So we wish you all the best. Lisa Button, the Chief Executive Officer at Community Refugee Sponsorship Australia. Lou Hurley, one of the sponsors, and Ayat Hakim, who is a Syrian refugee who has been a part of this wonderful program. A huge thank you to the three of you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Nick, so many texts on this. This, it says, when my parents and their families first came to Australia in the 1940s and 50s, they all boarded with others until they could find a home to live in. They lived as a family again, and they're now long-term friends. Long-term friendships were made. And others saying, I was a country girl working in Melbourne in the 1960s as a major bank. I boarded most of that time, one placement. There was another bank worker staying there as well in the bungalow. There was two working girls from a law firm. It was all quite the norm back then.
A lot of people sharing that sort of stuff. Louise on the text line saying, my grandmother took in a boarder after my grandfather died. It wasn't just income, it was company. He became a family friend and stayed that way. Louise also saying, in my youth, it was really common from people, young women especially, coming from the country to Melbourne, find a room with a respectable woman, no living alone.
There's plenty of texts. We're going to try and get through as many of them as we can. Around 13 million homes have a spare bedroom at the moment. So what would make you consider opening up that room and maybe taking in a boarder?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. As we talk about the idea of opening up your spare bedroom to a boarder, is it something you would consider? Maybe for an international student, a refugee, or maybe even a couple or a small family, depending on how big your home is. Nick, throughout the news headlines today, around 1.2 rental vacancy in regional Victoria. Is this a solution to the housing crisis that's kind of staring us in the face?
If it's not a solution, it is very much a way of getting beyond a little bit of it. I think for a long time now, people have been looking at the way we, in the last few decades, have chosen to make housing work in Australia. And we're saying, I think, across the board, it needs to change. You know, we have too many people at the risk of homelessness, too many people living without shelter at the moment. This is a way that we could take up some of that slack. And I do know someone texted in before saying, you know, boarding's gone to Airbnb instead, but I don't know if that's entirely accurate. I think on Airbnb you don't see a lot of rooms being put up anymore. It is whole flats, it is whole houses. Mm. So you can't just point at things like short stay accommodation and say that's taken up all the spare rooms. That's a different problem, I think. Not saying it's not a problem, but it's a different problem.
David Bycroft is the founder and director of MyStay International, Australian Homestay Network. David, a warm welcome back to the Conversation Hour. I know over a year ago we were having a very similar conversation, and at the time there were concerns from listeners saying, I tried to do this and it just wasn't financially viable for me. I lost part of my pension, or there was a, you know, some kind of red tape or tax that was an implication for me to be able to do this. What's making it hard for people, do you believe?
Well, it has been hard in the past, but I think it's going to get a lot easier during this current crisis, because the government's moving rapidly to review the tax and pension and social security issues. And we are campaigning for them to make it very clear, so it encourages people to use their spare rooms, which would, of course, give them tax-free revenue then to help towards cost of living crisis, which is also there with the housing crisis.
David, you said clarity. Do you think one of the big stumbling blocks has been a bit of confusion around what can and can't be done and what it would mean?
That's the total problem, because the clarity is not made by the government. It's sort of like rulings here and rulings there, but they've gone quiet on pensioners and pensions. And what we need them to do is be loud and clear that it does not affect a pensioner to take an international student, say, into their home through a properly registered organisation. You know, like, we want to make sure there's some securities in place. But as you talked about before, lifetime friendships are formed. We've had hosts go to weddings overseas for their former students. And it is a fabulous thing. It just has to be totally, government has to stay out of it and just let it occur.
How possible? I mean, how likely is that?
Very likely under this crisis, because you'll see the pressure on international student visas, which all of our universities depend on for their revenue, because that's how they survive.
But in
the government's between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. In the past, I mean, lots of people are talking back, you know, saying, oh, look, it was quite common to have an international student, for example, stay with us. But I think in the process and over the decades, developers and private firms have seen a huge amount of money to be made from very small, subpar international student accommodation. And that's kind of seen by a lot of people as where international students should live, maybe even by the students and their families themselves. So is that a part of the problem, is that we don't think of the idea of an international student being welcomed into a home and by a family or an individual now? We think of them as staying in these tiny, small little bedsit apartments in the city.
Yeah, the regulations are getting much stronger and the purpose-built accommodation is getting a lot better, but there's just not enough of it. That's, you know, it accounts for 10% of the demand. So the only solution for international student growth or maintenance in Australia is properly managed hosted accommodation, and the government has to make a decision on the clarity around tax and pensions.
David, a few people in the text line, I'm not going to get anyone in trouble here, but a few people have talked about having people boarding, including some international students, paying cash off the books. I mean, it feels like in many ways what you said about the confusion, the stumbling block, people are trying to get away from, I guess, doing it via the government's regulations and are doing it anyway.
Yeah, so the reason they've introduced standards through you know, government-endorsed standards for homestay or hosted accommodation providers is because when there's a cash transaction to, you know, and a vulnerable consumer is involved, meaning either someone who desperately needs a house or an international student, there are always issues. So what we're trying to do is make sure the payment is clear of any problems so that it can be officially run and properly insured and there's proper standards in place for that relationship.
Multiple texts saying, I think it's a question of safety and security. I wouldn't trust anyone these days. Are we less trustworthy, the idea of opening up your home? Is that something that we did decades ago and now we're too afraid?
Well, there might be a little bit of that, but what I can tell you just based on our statistics is we have the highest number of host applications ever per month now in our last 16-year history. And that's because more and more people, I think, are having trouble with their own cost of living and needing tax-free revenue in their house to help pay electricity bills, for instance.
Which is why I'm surprised we haven't seen, I think, more push on this to begin with, because it feels like not only can it help people find accommodation, but it could be a very valuable source of helping out with families who are feeling that pressure.
Yes, and that's why it's a complete solution. It helps cost of living. It helps the retirees and the pensioners because they're the ones hurting, you know, a little bit as well in the current environment. And most of them have spare rooms, which is great. And they don't need the rooms at, sorry, they usually only need the rooms at Christmas when the student probably doesn't need it. So it all works nicely. I mean, the government's in a good position here to maximise the use of hosted accommodation.
I just wonder, you know, whether there's a marketing campaign, an advertising campaign that's needed, because people may not even think about this as an option, David. And we have a lot of empty nesters. We have a loneliness epidemic, not only a housing crisis and then a cost of living crisis when you sort of join all of these dots. Is there a marketing campaign that's needed, do you think?
Well, we've launched one and we're out there now promoting it to as many people that will listen, but it really needs some action quickly because we're coming into the moment when we will try to limit the number of student visas coming into the country, and that will be a disaster for one of our biggest exports, international education.
David, we keep hearing this term 13 million spare rooms across the country. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's come from the Australian government census, so that's very accurate. Any time I mention that to anyone, they all say, oh, I've got two, or I've got one, or I've got three. You know, there's people out there that I talk to every day. So the spare rooms are definitely out there.
Oh, well, that's right. I mean, our homes have got bigger. You know, the days of having three kids in one bedroom, you know, a couple of bunk beds. Do they even make bunk beds anymore? Just a thing of the 80s. David, thank you so much for your time. And we can push people to the MyStay International and Australian Homestay Network.
Yeah, the Australian Homestay Network is the best place because it takes host applications every month, you know, from everyone. So just please find Australian Homestay Network.
David, thanks for your time. David Bycroft there is the founder and director of MyStay International. There are already six people in our house, three teens, an elder with dementia and two stressed out 50-year-olds. Nobody would want to live here. And another saying, my grandmother had a boarder in her sleep out at our home. It was all very stressful as well. And again, though, Nick, a reference to that cash in hand as an option. Trish has called through. Morning, Trish.
Good morning.
What did you want to share?
I'm an older lady and living alone now, and I like to keep my two spare bedrooms for my children when they come to visit, or my grandchildren. And I don't know that I'd feel safe opening up my home to a stranger, especially a male. Older women are already more vulnerable to all kinds of exploitation and abuse. And what's more, I just don't think it's up to us as a generation to solve the housing crisis that's been building 30 years of several stages of government neglect and policy that let the rich get richer and hoard houses.
Trish, what would make you feel safer if there was a way that sort of people were being registered, if there was better sort of, I guess, governmental oversight? Is there a way that you would feel safer, or is it just, I guess, more where you see the world at the moment?
It's partly where I see the world at the moment, but who would trust government at the moment? Like, look at that story of domestic violence, people who went to police in WA and were ignored, and then their two friends were killed by an abusive man.
I just think that's not quick enough.
Itself has abused people all over the country, robo-debt through. Why would I trust a government department to look after finding somebody to put into my house?
Trish, really good to hear from you as well. And then there's also how long, you know, reviews and the removal of red tape takes. But you do need the checks and balances, right, Nick?
Of course
safety
you
is
do.
Paramount.
Of course you do. And we've had a few people on the text line saying, and I think Trish just said those exact words, why would you want a stranger in your house? And of course you don't want a complete stranger. You want to have some checks and balances, as you just said, Rochelle, but you want to know them. And I guess my hope would be, especially if we're talking about boarding, especially if we're talking about international students, they're not a stranger for very long. They become someone who is part of the household. I mean, that is the ideal here, surely.
Dorothy says, yes, Rish, they still make bunk beds. Oh, we have a set in my house.
Fact you got nostalgic for the bunk bed.
I love a bunk bed.
This country used to be beautiful. We had bunk beds. What's ever happened?
I'll never forget my uncle made the bunk beds and they were awesome. But then we tried to get them out, but he built them in the room of my cousin's room and then realised when they tried to remove them that they actually didn't fit outside the door. So my cousins, who then ended up 6 foot, slept in bunk beds for a very, very long time. Anyhow, I digress. This fascinating conversation. My grandfather landed from Europe in the 50s, no English, little money, and after working his way around Australia for a year, he found work in his industry in regional Victoria, and then the employee found him a board to live with, a large local family. He ended up marrying one of the daughters, and here we are. As a result, so that's their story. In saying that, how much of a boarding era was made possible by people leaving home when they were in their early teens and 20s and opening up their bedrooms. So I guess that's the other thing as well, is that we are having young people stay at home for longer. Nick's in Deer Park. G'day, Nick.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Really well. What did you want to say?
I had boarders in for years. I found it really simple. I didn't have any government involved in it all. I kept it simple, it was safe. Predominantly I had men who were suffering from domestic violence, believe it or not. And I've maintained a friendship with a few of them, and they keep coming, trying to come back, but I don't do it anymore. I have considered doing it again, but I don't think they want to go through an organisation or bed and breakfast or whatever it's called. I just put them out in the paper.
Oh, wow.
It was simple. Stay a week, stay a month. No year, no bonds, no dramas. You want to leave, just give me a week's notice or a couple of days' notice, take care.
And Nick, did you say you've kept in touch with some of these people, so it's been a lasting relationship?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Some guys moved in three or four times. They sort of tried to rekindle a relationship they had at the time. It didn't work and they came back. And it was pretty much done. Just go out the back and have a cup of coffee and have a chat.
And figure out whether it's going to work for people. I love the idea, Nick, that you put an ad in the local paper and then you do your own due diligence by, you know, sitting in the backyard and having a cuppa.
Having a coffee and making sure everything's okay.
You know, we often think international students, but regional students need somewhere to live if they choose to study or work in the city and you don't necessarily have friends or family in the city, then taking in a boarder from a different part of the state is incredible as well, Nick.
It would have made sense to me. I mean, that's exactly how I went to university up in Wollongong from Deniliquin. It was I tripped my way up there and looked at a bit of boarding opportunity, but ended up in a share house. So, of course, that was a very different era when share houses were plentiful and maybe a little bit more affordable as well. I think, Rochelle, it was $42 a week for a room.
Jeepers griefers. Sorry, my first house that I rented was $22 a week. It had no window, but it was $22 a week, so it was very affordable.
Were you going to pay extra for a window? Of course not. That money could go anywhere. It was very important.
So would you consider opening up your spare bedroom to a boarder, to an international student, maybe to a student or to a young person that's moving from regional Victoria?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton, where we're talking about the amount of spare rooms we have across the country and whether or not opening them up to boarders, to someone who needs a home, is just one of the potential solutions to our rental and housing crisis. It does happen, Nick. People do open up their homes. And someone who knows more than about this than us is Rachel Lucas, who's one of our feature reporters based down in Sale at ABC Gippsland. Rachel, when you did a story on a woman who, an older woman who I think was a professional working woman and tried as hard as she could to find rental accommodation and couldn't and ended up living out of her car, which is the story we hear so often for older women, you had a flood of calls from locals in the Gippsland area wanting to open up their home.
Yes, Rochelle. Well, it was actually people from WA and Brisbane and all over Australia who called in offering a shower. You can use my kitchen. I have a car parking space outside the house. Sort of, it was getting a bit ridiculous, actually. But yeah, lots of people quite generous. Obviously, people have got Airbnbs and holiday homes. She had a few offers of an entire, you know, home for the short term, and lots of people offering low rent. So there is really a need for a dating agency, I think, particularly for people who've got facilities with perhaps older people. But I will say that once you get older, we all get stuck in our ways, right? So it's not as easy as maybe when you're young or you're arriving in Australia to just check up with somebody, because, you know, once we get to this demographic, the over 55s, particularly women who are the most vulnerable of becoming homeless and living in their cars, etc., those women have often been through a lot of trauma in their life. They actually want the peace and quiet of no drama. People and share houses and living arrangements bring drama into people's lives who are just trying to find peace and sanctuary and heal and just find their own mind again. We tend to forget that living in someone's house, like a lady I was speaking to on Monday, because I basically went to a trailer park, and because as a follow-up to the story over the weekend, I had a call from a woman in West Gippsland to tell me, who told me there was a series of women living in a trailer park who all had their own cabins, and they had basically living alone together so they could have their own space. And that's important as you get older, because you want to have hobbies. There was a woman who was living with her daughter, but she didn't feel like she could, you know, do her quilting at night on the dining room table because she was making a mess.
Well, that's right. And I think with boarding and taking in boarders, as we said right at the beginning, it's not something for everyone. But I think, Rach, what we were most impressed with is we think, well, are we at a point in society now where we're too scared to open up our homes? We're too scared to say, yes, we will welcome you in. But I think, you know, you were able to prove that people are more than willing to share space when it's right for them.
I guess it depends on the person. You know, we've got this is about personalities. It's not just about spare rooms and people willing to give. You really got to get the match of the living habits right. And, you know, like putting two vegetarians together or something like that. Just these little sort of
things. Don't single out vegetarians. You'll start a fight.
I think matching up people and their living habits and their pets. Now, the pets is a big one.
Yeah.
Everybody, a lot of people, older people come with a pet these days. So do the pets get along? You know, little things and details like that.
Well, that's where you have to do your due diligence as well. And I think one of the first questions you should be asking is not are you vegetarian, but do you have a pet, possibly? And that's something that you should look at. Rachel, thank you. I do hope that those calls keep coming through, but at the same time, it sounds like you've taken on a second job to be able to field all of those calls from people. But it shows just how incredible the locals are in Gippsland. That's Rachel Lucas there, features reporter for ABC Gippsland. Andrea is in Blair Gowrie. Morning, Andrea.
I have my second boarder coming into the property, so I have a studio. I'm lucky to have a little independent studio on the property down here. I bought a house much too large for myself, thinking, you know, the family would all come down, and they don't, and that often happens down here over here. So I decided, you know, get some extra income. I had the first boarder come in working in hospitality in Sorrento, in one of the big hotels. He was here for a number of months, and he has recommended the studio to one of his colleagues who's about to move in. And they both love the space. They're completely independent of me. They've got a huge garden. And to be honest, they go off to work at lunchtime. They come home sort of later in the evening, if you know, early hours. So, you know, they're no problem whatsoever.
And Andrea, it sounds like it's been a really, really positive experience for you.
It has been a very positive experience. The second guy about to come in, I think, is in the share house. I heard some dreadful stories about the way he was being ripped off by the landlord. I'm sure, you know, he's not the only one from what I've heard.
Well, this is why, you know, you do have to be careful, and often the recommendation is to go through. I know, you know, we've had people saying, the guys put an ad in the paper, and I did my own due diligence by having a cup of coffee. But at the same time, if to get all those checks and balances, to get all those paperwork, go through something like, you know, Homestay, which is a registered business that will do all of that work for you. But Andrea, it's great to hear that it's worked out for you. Chris is in Wangaratta and he says, I have a boarder at the moment, a student who's studying nursing and needed a place while she was in Victoria. This is the third. And many asking about tax implications, which we might speak to Dr. Michael Fotheringham about in just a moment. But this is from Jackie and it says, unfortunately, I've opened up my spare room to a snorer.
Oh, no. See, you've got to need due diligence. What do they sleep like? I'm enjoying this text from Pauline saying, our son boarded with a woman who was only a few years older in country Victoria back 26 years ago. She and her husband are still lifelong friends. They're godparents to each other's children now. And she got him to eat vegetables, something his own mother couldn't do for 18 years.
Food comes into it a lot, have you noticed? Even right at the beginning of today's program, you know, if you're bringing in an international student, maybe there's a cuisine, you know, Lou was taught how to eat and cook beautiful Syrian food as a result of them opening up their home. Dr. Michael Fotheringham is the director of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Michael, it feels like there's a lot of, we used to do this and now we don't. Have you noticed a shift in us not wanting to open up our spare bedrooms?
Oh, everything old is new again, isn't it? There's a return to, I think, some of the older ideas that happened. But particularly in you know, post-war period, there was a lot of this when we had a housing crisis going on as a country then. And I think, you know, we're turning back to some of the same solutions that worked then. That actually make a lot of sense. If you've got a spare room and there's someone who needs a room, match them up and off you go. And, you know, whether they're called boarders or lodgers or tenants or subtenants, there are different sort of legal frameworks you can apply around it. And there are implications for that. That's worth thinking through. But the simple thing is, if you've got more room than you need and someone doesn't have enough room, finding a way to share it is great.
Michael, those legal frameworks seem to be a bit of a stumbling block for some people. They feel like there's a bit of confusion about what is the right way to go about and do this.
Yeah, look, I think it is a complex field and getting some advice is sensible. You know, you can go down the relatively formal path of having a subtenant or a tenant in your own property and have a normal, you know, rental lease for that. Some people don't feel comfortable with that approach given they're also living in the house, so more of a boarder lodger model. And, you know, there used to be a difference between boarders and lodgers, which was around providing meals and doing laundry. That's largely sort of forgotten these days, and people tend to self-cater.
Mm.
But, you know, there's different laws in each of the states around the country. It's actually something that's on Ahuri's current research program is looking at the different frameworks around lodging and boarding opportunities and the ways that state governments can encourage or impede these sorts of community-based solutions.
I know, I think that you just lost me at laundry all of a sudden. It was all seeming really good. And then I went, oh my goodness, if I had to do another load of laundry. But anyhow, I'll move over onto that. Michael,
well, maybe a contract in as part of the deal that
maybe yours. We already live out of the clean laundry basket. Nothing ends up in our actual cupboards. But there's a text that says, this isn't and I'm paraphrasing here, but it says, this isn't a solution to the housing crisis. This is a band-aid on what is a gaping wound. Is it a part of a solution, though, do you think, if it's done properly?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you define as a solution. It's an adaptation to the system, and it's a way that members of the community who have opportunity to provide something can do so. And look, they can get a financial return for it too, so it's not just an act of charity. But it is a way to help house people, and that is a positive. It's not government fixing everything, but we can't always expect government to fix all of the problems entirely on their own. You know, there's a role for the community at large in these bigger challenges. So, you know, it's not going to fix the problem. It's not going to solve all of our housing woes, but it's part of the tapestry.
Michael, in terms of that extra income, a few people commenting they're worried about its impact on capital gains, what it might mean for pension. Is there enough clarity around that for people who want to take this on?
I think individual legal advice is always a good idea for this sort of thing, to talk to a financial advisor or your accountant, because, you know, depending on how long you've lived in the property, the status of your mortgage, there's a whole lot of complexity that is attached to that. We have a lot of laws around property and the values in this country, so it is worth getting advice, but it's worth exploring at least.
The idea that international students, when we spoke to MyStay, the idea that international students should never really be a part of the private rental market. There's too much opportunity for exploitation, it's too expensive, and that welcoming an international student into a home, you know, in Victoria is the right way to go. How do you feel about that, Michael?
I'm not sure that I'd be quite so absolute about it. I think, you know, the universities in particular bring in a lot of international students and are involved with or partnered with, you know, large-scale providers of student accommodation. You see the big towers near the university, you know, Scape, and there's a bunch of other companies that provide this accommodation. And certainly the federal government are encouraging universities to do more to provide housing for students. But they should also be free to access the private rental market, same as anyone else who's living in this country. Even if they're here on a temporary visa for 2 or 3 years, they should be able to live as part of the community just like anyone else.
That makes a lot of sense. Dr. Michael Fotheringham, thank you so much for your time. Michael's the director of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute.
Let's have a chat to Josephine. Morning, Josephine.
Yes. Hi. Oh, look, I've had a tenant in student housing and I've been without a tenant for about 12 months at the beginning of the, you know, COVID and everything. And it's been a learning curve after boarding with people and having boarders when I was a kid at mum and dad's place, and you know, been through the gamut, and it's just a fabulous way of getting to know people.
So Josephine, you were a boarder when you were younger?
Yes. No, when I was older, after I left my marriage, my partner and I went and lived with a friend who, I don't know how we got in touch with her, but she was just lovely to stay with and her family.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was just a wonderful experience.
And is that what made you then consider opening up your home?
No. I already had a rental property in the city for student housing. And when, of course, the COVID came, we had lockdowns and all sorts of things, and no students for 12 months. It was terrible, but managed to survive. And, it's been a real learning curve having country kid come down and stay with us when I was a kid, and, you know, it was just beautiful.
Good to hear from you, Josephine. Thank you. Nick, there's Texas. I have an international student in my home. She's amazing. We share culture and language. I'm becoming better at Spanish. Again, though, it's cash, says this particular one. So, I mean, I think the incentives and I think the tax implications probably really need to be addressed, because otherwise, if people want to do the right thing and if they're needing that extra money, they're going to find ways to do it. And I'm deliberately not giving names here because I don't want people to get into trouble for this.
No.
So if people are finding ways of doing it cash, then, you know, maybe the government does need to actually really address this faster than they currently are.
It's clear that there is, if not red tape, at least confusion here. And this has been, I guess, the ongoing theme of this morning is, where do we get that clarity? How do we make sure people can get in with simple advice? I mean, Michael was saying before, you know, maybe talk to a financial counsellor or a lawyer or get an idea on this. That's out of the realm for some people. That is a difficult step to take. And I think what we know is that sometimes you end up with a early stumbling block, which means you never follow through. And a few people, even Texas, saying, this all sounds too difficult, happy to keep my spare room spare. That's what's going to happen if we don't make this an easy pathway.
This text that says, I'm a 10-pound POM, arrived in May in 1971 into Sydney. I used a small company called Share a Flat, whereby I was given and vetted apartments and or houses with a room for rent. I'm very successful. I got a room with a lovely home. The main tenant, it was better than lovely because we ended up married. That's from Caroline. That's happened a few times, but then some people saying that's the reason why people find that it's a bit weird and creepy, right? So So, but they ended up married and everyone was happy. And other people saying, I'm really torn. I love the idea of the community coming together, easing the housing crisis in this way. But it's also letting governments off the hook with responsibility. And that's from Sue. If you want to listen back to today's program, you want to share it with someone, then the best way to do that is to go to the ABC Listen app. The Conversation Hour is also a daily podcast, and we do a lot of housing and thinking outside the square when it comes to housing programs on that. So go to the ABC Listen app or just chuck Conversation Hour into your search engine and even the word housing, and there will be a flood of programs. Best thing to do, subscribe, and you will get a new program every day.